We'll be speaking about Berlin, actually, Berlin's struggle about its waterfront site, a little bit further east than Alexanderplatz. And here we have a double pack. I guess you're going to go successively. So our first speaker then is Albert Scharenberg. He teaches political science and North American studies at the Freie Universität Berlin. He is also a staff journalist of the monthly Blätter für Deutsche und Internationale Politik. That's the journal for German and international politics. And he received his PhD from the Freie Universität Berlin. And his research and teaching focuses primarily on American history and politics, with a focus on racism, social movements, African Americans, and city politics, as well as German history and politics. His books are about black nationalism and Malcolm X. Right now, he is working on a book about Martin Luther King Jr., and I'm sure current politics give you a whole new perspective on those kind of aspects as well. But with that, I'll turn it to you to not tell us about Malcolm X or... Oh, I guess I'll introduce both of you since you're not going to break it up. Okay. So the second speaker then is Ingo Bader, all the way to the left. He is currently writing a dissertation at the Center for Metropolitan Studies. He is a geographer, and his dissertation analyzes creative cities as new urban regimes, and he also investigates urban cultural economies in Berlin and New York. His research interests revolve around the urban economy, urban restructuring, and regime theory and culture. And the two have, you know, collaborated for a long time. And they have actually co-edited a book with the title Der Sound der Stadt, Musikindustrie und Subkultur in Berlin. And Ingo has also been active in neighborhood organizations and various social movements. So with that then, I'll turn it over to Albert. And
Thank you very much. I'll start right away. The main vocation of the intellectual and of intellectual critique is, of course, to critically analyze the powers that be. This, however, can be done in very different ways, using a variety of theories and theoretical approaches. We argue that in this respect, many works on the so-called neoliberal city have tended to minimize the capacity of agency to actually influence and change the existing power relations and thus the living conditions in and outlook of cities. All too often, there have only been top-down analysis focusing on structural arguments. This, in turn, leaves little room for agency and it tends to disarm urban social movements fighting neoliberalism. Our thesis is that the so-called neoliberal city is no monolithic block at the disposal of the ruling class. While the view of a neoliberalizing city has more recently accepted the statement, it has still refused to focus on counter-hegemonic tendencies existing within cities. We would thus emphasize that there are many actors and movements influencing city development and politics, and that cities are characterized by frictions and contestations. Therefore, we would prefer to speak of a city dominated or governed by neoliberal concepts rather than using a term like neoliberal city, because it leaves little analytical space for the frictions and contestations within the city and for the fact that we are seeing, as Antonio Gramsci pointed out, you see the link to Oren, an ongoing struggle and negotiation process over the outlook and future of the city. Many different forces, including many forces from below, actually participate in this process. Thus, critical intellectual work should always focus on the existing power relations, which are less cohesive than many top-down approaches suggest. By reintroducing the importance of agency into theory, we avoid drawing a nightmarish picture of the cities that be, which tends to disarm social activism. And we should rather analyze social reality asking what can and what is being done to actually change urban reality. In the following, We will therefore focus on Berlin's arguably most successful urban social movement of the last decade or so. In analyzing its conditions and politics, we want to demonstrate that there are possibilities to challenge neoliberalism and, despite all barriers and drawbacks, to contribute to building a city beyond disaster capitalism. We will analyze public protest against Media Spree, a large waterfront redevelopment project promoted by creative industries in Berlin's inner city district Friedrichshain-Kreuzberg, that culminated in a successful referendum this summer. Our presentation will first sketch the neoliberal character of Media Spree by showing the institutional dominance of real estate interests, as well as the global players' attempt to incorporate the district's long tradition and strong presence of subculture. Secondly, the evolution as well as the politics of the urban social movement against Media Spree will be analyzed in the context of the contested city. In recent years, the restructuring of the post-Fordist city has increased social and spatial fragmentation. In his path-breaking sociology of the quartered city, Peter Marcuse has shown that the interconnectedness of upgrading and dilapidation is characteristic of this process. Developers within globalizing cities have focused on areas that have the potential to be turned into prime sites. All over the capitalist world, waterfront sites have thus been among the first objects of development policies. Hamburg's seaport or the London and Liverpool Docklands demonstrate how old industrial and formerly neglected inner city areas may be turned into prime land taken over by the affluent. These policies, however, rarely go unchallenged. In many cases, an uphill battle against real estate interests, which more often than not are in cahoots with city politics, and against global players is waged by local residents who cannot afford to live in the district any longer. In the context of the city of Berlin, the so-called Media Spree development project fits into this general post-Fordist pattern, even though real estate value in Berlin is, of course, not comparable to that in cities like London or Hamburg. I will briefly outline how general features of city development are reflected in this case concerning de- and re-industrialization, entrepreneurial city, creative city, and gentrification. But let me first give you an idea of the project scale itself. Kicked off by Universal Music's move from Hamburg to Berlin, close to Oberbaumbrücke, it's almost in the middle there, Media Spree was founded in 2001. The development area contains the space between Treptower Brücke in the east, Elsenbrücke in the east, and Janowitzbrücke in the west, on both sides of the Spree. And that means also right at the side of the Berlin Wall, separating east and west. Media Spree itself was started as a private marketing organization for the real estate owners in this area and then transformed into a more formal association, which simultaneously was assigned the task of regional management, meaning that a real estate-dominated association was largely responsible for public issues. This area, in particular north of the Spree in Friedrichshain, had become urban wasteland soon after German unification. In the context of the deindustrialization of East Berlin, there was no immediate need for this land. And even south of the river in Kreuzberg, there was little investment activity before and right after unification. Kreuzberg was surrounded by the Berlin Wall, mostly. It was almost an island and the city's poorest district. Real estate companies, global players among them, soon became interested in this area because of its inner city and waterfront location. Of at least equal importance, however, was the fact that this territory is a location of Berlin's creative industries. It is the city's most important cluster of the cultural industry, containing big players such as Universal Music Germany, MTV Central Europe, and the recently opened O2 World built by Anschutz Group, but also many small and medium-sized enterprises of the music, club, fashion, and media industries. Moreover, a lot of the smaller firms and actors are part of the traditionally alternative Kreuzberg subculture and of the post-unification electronic music subculture. In fact, the presence of these subcultural and innovative enterprises was a central reason for the global players to move into this area in the first place. They want to incorporate the spirit and authenticity of subculture and use it as a brand. Media's Spree development was strongly supported by city politics. Assuming that the attraction of large corporations would bring in jobs and foster a trickle-down effect, a lot of public property was sold with very few requirements. Media Spree was turned into a public-private partnership dominated by real estate interests. In the association, only landowners may become members, while representatives of the district form a board of directors that holds little power. The genesis and structure of Media Spree demonstrates the dominance of the neoliberal idea of what Bob Jessop has called entrepreneurial city. In fact, city politics has changed a lot in the course of events. While in the 1970s and 80s, the focus was on local revitalization with a social notch, now the attraction of large corporations and of the creative class are presented as the solution to the city's problems. Of course, this deeply affects the district's social composition. The intention of changing the so-called Kreuzberg mix into a creative mix has repeatedly been articulated by the real estate industry. So far, however, there is some gentrification, but comparatively little displacement, at least, I mean, compared to the Prenzlauer Berg, north of the city center. This was, as you may recall, covered in yesterday's presentation of Matthias Berndt and André Holm. In any case, the project was planned and orchestrated from above, but it was subsequently challenged from below. In fact, successfully challenged, at least to some degree. Ingo will now analyze Berlin's latest urban social movement.
Thanks, Albert. I will take it from here. In the following, I will discuss popular resistance against Media Spree. And well, being an activist from the movement myself, I represent a few from the standpoint of a particular observer, or rather from the standpoint of an activist observer. So, how did the urban social movement against the large-scale development project come into being? Well, the group Media Spree Versenken, meaning Think Media Spree, was formed in the context of Kreuzberg Alternative CSD, that is an alternative Christopher Street Day event taking place on the same day as the regular CSD, but having a more radical and subcultural outlook than the mainstream event. During the last 3 years, the core group developed from a small nucleus of activists into a broadly recognized agent of social change. It has won many allies, in particular from the club and party scene, including the so-called Hedonistic International, from the radical left, and from tenant organizations. Media Spree Versenken has managed, and this is truly amazing for such an outside group, to get broad media attention. In fact, the positions eventually even gained hegemony within mainstream media. What are the reasons for this success story? Well, first of all, it was a broad range of activists that proved to be decisive. Eventually, the group turned out to be one of the few cases where the alternative and radical left successfully cooperated with subcultural actors, in particular from the club scene, as well as with more mainstream companies. The range of protest activities reflected this. There were demonstrations with 1,000 participating, various activities aimed at disrupting official media spree events, a regular information booth twice a week in Kreuzberg, tons of flyers, mobilization via the internet, etc. The variety proved to be an important factor of mobilization. Second, the movement was successfully in focusing a broad range of activists on one particular political project. Having a petition for a referendum in Media Spree in the city's district of Kreuzberg-Friedrichshain. The focus received broad public and media attention. In fact, it was the new city government that only recently made possible using referenda as a vehicle for mobilization, since the referendum meant using a broadly accepted and democratic way of challenging a highly controversial policy. It was really a breakthrough for the movement. Of course, this did not come without price. Number one, the focus of the campaign had to be somewhat narrowed so that it would include only aspects that could be dealt with by the district. Number two, even a successful referendum would not be binding for politics. I will come back to this problem in a minute. The activist's most powerful argument against Media Spree was the scale of the development. The area is quite large, and the planned compounds are huge modern office buildings that will have a massive impact on the city district. The general focus on the waterfront illustrates this, despite a certain NIMBY attitude within the movement itself. The question was and is, whose interests are going to shape the waterfront? And in more general terms, who decide what's going on in the city? Is it the investors and political representatives, or is it the citizens themselves? In this respect, the struggle aims at the core of neoliberal ideology. It is therefore a fight over the right to the city. Even after the successful referendum took place in July this year, the public dispute over Media Spree has not ended. Politics is still trying to hold on to business as usual and to change as little as possible. This has, of course, to do with the fact that change would cost a lot of money because zoning would have to be changed, etc. But it also has to do with the fact that political parties, including the Green and the Left Party, do not support the oppositional movement. The Left Party in the city, it is by and large the oldest Eastern PDS, is part of the city's governing coalition and has accomplished certain things, but it's still caught up in the idea of reindustrialization East Berlin, to which Media Spree service industry boom. So the argument goes, may contribute. The Greens, on the other hand, pay lip service to the demands of the referendum while simultaneously undermining and using it for their own means, that is, to make policy against the city government. From our point of view, intellectual critic of Media Spree Versenken should now focus on three things. Number one, watch out for allies and don't walk into the NIMBY trap. To put it in another way, focus on large-scale projects and do not simply oppose everything that's going on. For instance, the development at Osthafen, which is supposed to be transformed into a media harbor, should not be a major issue. We would suggest focusing on large-scale developments instead and on trying to win allies from small and medium-sized enterprises. Of course, this approach is not without its own ambivalences. But it may help coming to terms with the issue of jobs, which is probably the strongest argument on the side of the city, and one of the reasons why working-class people are underrepresented in this kind of movements. In addition, the issue of gentrification displacement should be placed on the movement's agenda. Number two, develop alternatives. Media Spree Versenken accomplished great things, but it was not good at developing realistic alternatives. The development and zoning plan can hardly be changed at this point of time, but there may be more and fresh ideas concerning alternative use. Again, it is necessary to avoid the NIMBY trap. Number three, insist on having things changed because of the referendum. The district has recently formed a board dealing with the implications of the referendum. This board needs political pressure and political parties should be forced to respect the referendum. That, however, will probably be the most difficult part. I'm not going on to summarize the results of the presentation. What we have wanted to stress, however, is that the movement around media Spreeversenken has proven that neoliberal politics can be challenged in the arena of globalizing cities, and that popular resistance actually changed not only the district but politics in Berlin in general. From our point of view, the true task of intellectual critic is to strengthen agency within theory of the urban by showing that even a city dominated by neoliberalism is not a neoliberal city, but rather a highly contested terrain full of everyday as well as explicitly political struggles, and that these ongoing struggles actually shape and change the city itself, showing the way to effectively challenge neoliberal dominance. Our essence, therefore, may be summarized in the words, another city is possible. Thank you.